This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Liv and Len on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. It's Friday, so it's time for Good Things, where we speak to good people doing good things. So Rimbun Dahan is the beautiful sprawling home of Hijaz Kasturi and Angela Hijaz, which is set on 14 acres in Kuang in Selangor, and is described as a centre for developing traditional and contemporary art forms. Rimbun has also been a temporary home for many visual artists, dancers, choreographers, writers, arts managers, curators and researchers through various residencies, and has provided educational opportunities for students of architecture, ecology and botany. So what pushed Angela and Hijaz in the direction of cultural and environmental philanthropy? Joining me now are two of the directors of Rimbun Dahan, Angela Hijaz and Bilqis Hijaz, to share more. Welcome both of you. How are you today?
Thank you, Juliet. Very well, thanks, Juliet.
Lovely to have you both on. So I think, you know, when anyone thinks about Rimbun Dahan, we think of art, nature and architecture. I would say those are the three things that come to mind. Tell me a little bit about Rimbun Dahan itself, Angela. You know, what led you and Hijaz to set up your home all the way over there in Kuang?
Well, I guess it started with looking for land in KL that we couldn't afford to build a new house, and we had this land. So the opportunity was to build here. It's a way, it was further then when there was no highway and no MRT.
Yeah.
But the girls were still of an age where they would be able to enjoy moving to a new house and experience a big garden and different possibilities. I think when you're living in a suburban house, your realm of activity is necessarily limited. But here we've had space and we've had the opportunity to, the financial wherewithal as well, to be able to do different things. And as he just always wanted to pay back for the opportunities that had been given to him over the years, we thought we'd be able to do more here than ever we could do in KL.
And tell me a little bit about the setup in Rimbun Dahan. You know, there's three reassembled and restored kampung houses. You've also got gardens, including a wetland, an orchard, and so many things. Tell me about all those different things.
Well, it started slowly. We moved here, built the house, had Serena's wedding, and then sort of stopped for a while and think, okay, what do we want to do? And a kampung house became available in 97. A friend found it and we thought, oh, that's a good idea. Let's restore that and move it to our place, which we did. And that was subsequently joined by another heritage house from Penang. And he just also in 94 decided that he wanted to invite artists to come and stay. So we ultimately built studios and a dance studio. And the garden was, it's still in progress, and it's taken 30 years to get this far, but now it's showing all its promise at the moment. Herb garden, forest garden, and it's just a lovely place to work. And during the pandemic, it's been wonderful to have to develop and to change, make changes, and it's really exciting for me. I love it.
Mm-hmm. And you know, Bilqis, you of course grew up there, or at least spent, you know, a good part of your growing up years there. You know, I mean, what's it like for you?
Yeah, we moved here and my parents started all the programs here when I was 11, and then I left to go overseas to university when I was 18. So I had a good 7 years living here. And recently I have moved back here from KL, where I was living previously, just at the beginning of last year's lockdown, which was, I think, the best decision I ever made, because the prospect of spending lockdown in a small apartment in Bukit Bintang versus 14 acres of luxurious garden out in Kuang, well, no contest, right?
No, none.
So that's been fun. And since I have moved back here, we have luckily been able to continue doing a lot of our residency programs. They haven't been affected by all of the lockdowns and MCOs as much as other arts activities certainly in Malaysia have been. We haven't, of course, been able to have international artists coming in, which we had originally planned for, but we did a round of applications and got a lot of interest from local artists who also wanted, presumably, to escape their four walls in the city.
Yep.
And that was quite surprising because generally when we do round open applications, we get a lot of interest from overseas and we don't get that much interest from Malaysians. So it was wonderful to have renewed interest from local artists and to be able to welcome more local artists to Rembundahan throughout the last year. So we've just continued with our programs here in a sort of quiet way, but the artists have been in their studios and working really hard. So that's been great for us.
Okay, all right. And we're going to talk a little bit more about, you know, I guess how Rimbun is just a center for many things, right? But before that, can we talk a little bit about Hijaz? He is, of course, a very defining figure in Malaysian architecture. He's responsible for so many major landmarks. I mean, let's see, there's Menara Maybank, there's Tabung Haji, for example. There's even the Telecom Tower, of course. Maybe you can just share a little bit about, you know, his career, you know, and what led him to start his architecture firm.
Oh, if you want to go right back to the beginning, he was born in poverty-stricken conditions and in Singapore, but he was lucky enough to have chances to go to Raffles Institution later on in secondary school. And then he was offered a Colombo Plan scholarship to go to Australia to do architecture, which is something he'd always wanted to do. He'd helped his father build houses and the houses that they lived in. And he was interested in that. And architecture seemed to him a good mix because he was good at art, but he needed something where he could make money. He was very motivated to make money. So then after his architecture, he moved back to Singapore and then to Malaysia. And ultimately, after teaching at UITM, where he founded the School of Art, Architecture and Design, he set up his own practice, and it was very difficult at first because in the late 60s, after the riots and early 70s, it wasn't easy. There was nothing happening in KL. But he stuck at it, and ultimately he was in the right place at the right time with the right skill set. And he got a lot of work, a lot of university work, a lot from the government, for which we are very grateful. He has managed to establish a thriving practice, and he realized his dream of making a reasonable amount of money, and he could live in the comfort and support people. And he also felt an obligation to pay back to others because he had been the beneficiary of the kindness of many other people, and this was something that had inspired him. So now he's not really active in his practice, and he's taken up painting, strangely enough.
Wow.
And throughout the pandemic, he's been working in his studio every day, sometimes doing overtime also. So he's been finding it very rewarding, and it keeps him occupied because he has to be occupied. If he's not occupied, he'd be unbearable.
Well, my father has become one of our resident artists.
Very prolific from what I hear as well, right?
Extremely prolific. Yes, you can see the state of the canvases piling up in our storeroom.
But he doesn't get an allowance.
Yes,
he complains.
All the other artists get an allowance. Why doesn't he get an allowance?
Just let us know when the exhibition at the Underground and gallery is happening,
yeah,
okay?
Yeah, don't speak too soon. There will be. Don't worry.
Hey, I'm looking forward to it. Okay. So, Angela, you mentioned that he wanted to give back, right? And so, obviously, philanthropy became a part of that equation. And you, of course, were very involved in that as well. And I think everything kind of started with the visual arts residency, right? That started, am I correct? Then that started in 1994.
Yes. That was in when there was a disagreement between the Australian and Malaysian prime ministers, apparently. Mahathir called Keating. No, Keating called Mahathir recalcitrant.
That's how I learned that word, by the way, yes.
That's how we all learned that word.
That was the beginning of a cold period between international relations, and it became a bit uncomfortable being an Australian here. You'd go through immigration and, oh, you've been here so long. Why haven't you changed your passport? And, you know, Australia is not such a good place to go to. You know, you should be Malaysian. So it was a little awkward. And he thought it would be a good opportunity for us to invite Australian artists and Malaysian artists, have them living and working together or living in the same compound and separate studios, and then share an exhibition at the end. So, of course, for that you need studios, for that you need a gallery, for that you need all sorts of things. So that started a building boom. And then in 94 we had the first pair, an artist from Adelaide, John Fobister, and Malaysian Yuan De Zheng. We didn't know many artists at that point, apart from the older generation with whom he just had fraternized, people like Ibrahim Hussein, Latif Moidin, Khalil Ibrahim. But we wanted to get involved with younger people, younger artists. And we got advice from a lot of friends who run galleries or who knew artists. And now we've got a list as long as your arm of artists who've stayed here. And now dancers and academics and writers, all sorts of people. And it's been a wonderful experience for us as well as supporting them. We have met and fraternized and befriended people that we would never have met otherwise. Mm-hmm. I feel as you get older, your social sphere tends to solidify and you don't get to make new friends and make new acquaintances. But having them live together in the same compound, you inevitably come across them in a casual situation several times a week. And it's been wonderful, for more for me than for you, Jess, I think.
Why do you say that?
Well, I trundle past with my wheelbarrow past the studios every now and then, full of plants, and then you look in the studios and you stop and chat and see what's happening. So maybe the monkeys have trashed their kitchen and you need something to step in and get support. Or they're just, you ask them what they're doing in their studio and they'll tell you, I have this problem with this painting. I don't know what to do. But gradually they work it out. So, and you see the results. You see the work developing. You walk past and you see paintings. The current artist, though, has been nocturnal, Said Fakhruddin, and his work is on display at our gallery at the moment. So, but he works at night, and every morning you go past, and these canvases are piling up and piling up, stacked against the walls, and you don't really know what's happening. But when it's all hung in the gallery, my gosh, it's amazing.
Okay, and that's happening right now, isn't it?
That's happening right now. And
it's an exhibition called Tinde, mm-hmm. and it's on until the 11th of April, and it's open to the public, so you can register through the link on our website to come and see it, and also you can walk around the grounds and see our Indigenous Southeast Asian garden at the same time as the visit. We know that sometimes it takes a little while for people to come from KL, and so they want something that's worth their while. So you can have a whole half day's outing looking at Side's amazing canvases and having a little jaunt around the garden as well.
Okay, but it's important to register, right? I mean, there are some rules that we need to follow now, not just all.
Yeah, I mean, we are obviously following all the COVID guidelines for open galleries. So then registration is suggested as part of that, yeah.
Okay, all right. I'm speaking today to Angela Hijaz and Bilkis Hijaz. They are both directors of Rimbun Dahan. Rimbun Dahan, of course, is a centre for many, many things. It's a private art centre. It's a centre for Indigenous Malaysian flora and so much more. And we're going to find out a bit more about the other residencies offered there after this quick break. You're listening to Good Things on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Good Things on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs, and joining me on the line today are Angela Hijaz and Bilkis Hijaz, mother and daughter combo. They are both directors at Rimbun Dahan. And Rimbun Dahan is, of course, the really beautiful sprawling home of Hijaz, Kasturi and Angela, and of course Bilkis as well, the whole family. And it's also a centre for developing traditional and contemporary art forms. So before the break, we were talking more about the visual arts residencies, right? But that's not the only thing you guys offer. There's also lots of dance programs. There's also conservation ones. Tell me a bit about those.
We've been running the residency for choreographers since 2007, and we've had lots of interest from international choreographers as well as some local ones who come and stay. So basically our residencies are between 1 month and 3 months usually, but sometimes extending to 6 months, sometimes even a year. Mm-hmm. And so the dancers have come here to make new works with local dancers from the Malaysian dance community, which then I help to produce their final performances, which are anywhere between sort of a very small informal studio showing to a full-scale theatre production. Mm-hmm. So we've had lots of different approaches kind of on a case-by-case basis. And that's still going on at the moment, although until very recently we haven't been allowed to have live performances. Mm-hmm. But we have, instead of our usual dancing in place, a live event where we invite people to come and watch dance works happening in our garden. I've invited local choreographers to make dance films set and filmed in our garden. So it's like it's a digital version of dancing in place, I guess. And so we've been releasing those videos online, and we'll keep releasing them probably until the middle of April or so. We've got 6 videos, and you can see those on our Facebook page and also our website. So we've managed to continue with the dance residency, which has been really exciting, although, again, no international artists at this point in time. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the other residencies, we've been very excited to start a new one for environmental conservation researchers, not to actually do research here, but to take existing research that they have and complete or continue the writing up of their research for publication. We were interested to do this because my mother and I certainly have always been interested in environmental conservation, and part of her growing the Southeast Asian garden here is part of that interest. And as you probably know, we had a long-term partnership with the Worldwide Fund for Nature doing the Art for Nature fundraising program here at Rimbundahan. So we wanted to be able to somehow incorporate this support for environmental conservation with the other programs that we do. And this seemed like an easy way that we can provide space and kind of peace and quiet for researchers who otherwise might have a lot of difficulty focusing on their writing, to have a couple of weeks here to really get that writing done and out the door. And since we started this new residency program in the beginning of this year, we've had lots of interest, mostly from master's students who are trying to write up the master's theses. Mm-hmm. So we had a woman recently who was working on population censuses of gibbons. We have various women coming up, one who is working on rehabilitation of coral reefs. And so it's been really interesting to have these people with very different interests and knowledge sets than our usual artists. And possibly in the future, there'll be some kind of interesting synergy that'll come out of that combination.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
Yeah, well, we haven't seen it yet, but also because, the artists are very busy doing their own thing, and the researchers are obviously very busy trying to write their research. But we do try and engineer sort of informal social gatherings between all of the artists so that everyone gets to know who's on site. And actually, we had a lovely event the other night where we all have a WhatsApp group about the artists who are on site, or everybody who is on site. And I sent them a message to say, you should all go outside and see the big full moon. And everybody sort of went out from their various accommodations across the property and then promptly sent back messages about how wonderful the big full moon was. So that's certainly the kind of thing that can transcend environmental conservation and art alike.
Yes, and of course there's always Angela with her wheelbarrow, right? Kind of bringing everyone together, I assume.
Yes. And the staff, by the way, are appalled by the fact that my mother, who is over 70, is trundling around with the wheelbarrow. But they cannot break her of this habit.
I think it's wonderful. Don't ever stop it, Angela. How do people actually, if anyone's listening and they're interested to actually participate in these residencies, how can they go about doing that?
We have an open call for our resident artists a couple of times a year. It's not terribly scheduled on, obviously, because of the MCOs recently, that's kind of knocked the calendar askew a little bit. Mm-hmm. But if you want to find out about what we're doing, we have a newsletter that you can sign up for free, and we release a newsletter whenever we've got any particular calls for interest. So you can definitely see it there. You can see it on our Facebook page, also our Instagram account. And we often also have public events. So at the moment, we've got the exhibition going in the gallery, and other times things like Dancing in Place hopefully will come back. And my mother does garden tours occasionally, and we have open days. So those, again, the information is on Facebook or on our website or newsletter.
Okay. And I wanted to talk a little bit about Angela's garden tours. I mean, I attended it like I think 10, maybe 15 years ago, and I loved it. It was so informational. I'm happy to hear that you're still doing it. Is that something that's you're not going to give up anytime soon, I hope?
No, I'm not giving it up anytime soon, definitely. It's been a way for me to become sort of Malaysian, because I know perhaps more about Malaysian plants than most Malaysians do.
That's what I thought when I attended. I was ashamed of myself.
I've become this fountain of knowledge, but I tend to forget names of plants too, whereas when I need them, but that's just getting old. it's been very interesting. I've had a lot of support from M&S members and people working at FRIM and the Singapore Botanic Gardens, who helped me with identification. They've persuaded me to start a sort of herbarium collecting plant species. And I was doing it yesterday, and I was telling Bill, because it's a bit like being back kindergarten, lots of cutting and sticking. But it's fascinating. You get a nice little pile of sheets in neat plastic bags.
Yeah,
at the
she
end.
Has all these dried piles of dried leaves.
But you do the flower, the plant pressing, and it's really fun. So that's a relatively new introduction, mm-hmm. and I just have to find somewhere to keep it. But the garden has always been a great asset for us, I think, because, and it changes all the time, it's growing. I'm interested in carbon capture, obviously, to compensate for my rather extravagant lifestyle. And it's very rewarding to see trees growing into little carbon capturers. And the herb garden has always been a great entree, an opener for students, particularly when I have student visits. They don't really know much about gardens. They've possibly never been to one. But you take them into the herb garden and they start smelling the things that their grandmothers cooked or their parents may have had in their garden. And, oh, yes, that starts them talking, which Malaysians being very reticent, but they'll talk about food anytime.
That's true.
So that provides an opener to how important plants and biodiversity are to all of us. And I love doing the tours, and I've missed it this year. We haven't done any, but hopefully when COVID restrictions are over, we will resume. Just to talk about biodiversity and cultural heritage as well, sharing the old houses and talking about how life was before. Mm-hmm. You had to depend on what you had in your garden.
That's right.
There was no rushing to the pharmacy for a box of Panadol. You had to sort it out yourself. So it's provided me with an opportunity as an Australian living in Malaysia to be really engaged with the problems and the issues in this country and the sheer beauty of the species and the positivity of being able to plant a tree and 30 years later, there you see it and it's huge.
Wow.
And I think, oh, God, I planted that with my little wheelbarrow and a lot of help from my staff.
Well, if that's not a PSA for tree planting, I don't know what.
Yes, exactly. Well, last year we had one of our trees, which was a endangered species, actually fruited for the second time. And so we were able to distribute seeds. And it was amazing how many people in the community, we just put up a call on Facebook, were excited to come over and collect seeds to get their own seedlings and to plant their own enormous forest diptrocarps. So that was an exciting event, and hopefully we'll be able to do that again when we have other trees with seeds.
Yeah, I think the pandemic, you know, really made us think about growing our own things, you know, when we were kind of locked up, right, when we were trapped in our own little homes, you know, just made us think about gardening, you know, growing our own food, you know, just becoming self-sustainable. Yeah, all these important things sort of also came to the fore, I imagine.
Yes, we are far from self-sustainable here, although we do have now a large solar panel array, so that helps with electricity. Mm. And sometimes we have fantasy desires to turn our fish ponds into sour paddy in case of the apocalypse. Yeah, it might be possible. I mean, the area around here used to be kampung, dusun, and there was even some sour paddy. Now it's become very much urban fringe. And I think, as we all know, green spaces in the KL area are becoming so scarce and so threatened. And if the pandemic has helped us to appreciate how important those green spaces are, then that's a little silver lining in the cloud, I think.
Yeah. And, you know, there is another program that that you guys run, and that's linked to your hotel, the Kasturi Hotel, right? You also have a turtle hatchery program, am I correct?
We do, yes. It's had its ups and downs with monsoon seasons, but that's not the turtle season. So turtle hatching starts, the turtle laying starts in April. Mm-hmm. And traditionally, or over the last 7 years, we've been buying the eggs and reburying them in a partnership with a Trengganu family. And they run the hatchery, and I just financially support it. So we buy the eggs at market rate and rebury them, and then we release them with the assistance of guests and tourists from all over Malaysia and everywhere. Mm-hmm. They come, they get a little turtle. Used to be in your hand. Now we give children particularly half a coconut shell so that they don't drop it. Oh, and then you walk down to the edge, not quite the edge, a little way back from the shore. And on the count of three, everybody lets go their little turtle. Mm-hmm. And you watch it go, and the others are all racing, and yours is a bit slow, and you're urging it along and hoping that some sea eagle doesn't come and help itself.
Oh, no.
But, you know, it's a very emotional experience for most Malaysians, because how many of us have an opportunity to come face to face with wildlife?
Yeah.
And here you are holding a little hatchling, and it's setting off on a very hazardous journey. Even my grandson, who was only 4 at the time, I have a photograph of him letting go one of the hatchlings, and he's standing on the beach waving forlornly and about to cry. He wasn't the only one who was crying. Almost everyone cries, because you think, oh, poor little thing, it's got such a tough journey. Yeah. So it's been a wonderful thing to support, mm-hmm. and it's been the perfect environmental project, really. It provides a business for a local family and a living, and it provides an educational opportunity for lots of people, and it gives people an opportunity to be involved. That program also has beach cleanups. It does mangrove planting. It does all sorts of things, and they go firefly watching, of course, with another operator down in Churratting. Mm-hmm. So it's been a great addition, I think, to the economy of the East Coast. But I have been told by the Fisheries Department officer that I can buy the eggs, I can eat the eggs, but under no circumstances am I allowed to hatch the eggs. Because that is the prerogative of the department.
Oh, dear.
So I'm waiting to be prosecuted.
Well, we hope not.
But, you know, in any interviews that I've read, you know, with either of you or even with Hijaz, you do speak about the privilege that you have and, you know, why it's important to give back because you've had this privilege, right? Maybe you can explain why that is important to you.
Well, we're not living in a vacuum. I think we live an extremely privileged life, extremely privileged. And I think one cannot in good conscience live just for yourself. I'm not a terribly religious person, but I believe that if you are part of a community, then it's beholden on you to participate in some way. And the most interesting part is to support other people, to support other people achieve their goals. And I think that's been the core principle. What do you think?
Yeah, we often have visitors who come here who express this great surprise why you would ever want to do any of these things. Like, why would you want to spend your money this way? And especially to me, I think, like, why would you want to spend your life basically supporting other people rather than going out and having your own career and making lots of money? And I tell them, well, imagine, and of course, for most people, as Mom said, we're very privileged. For most people, you have to imagine you've got a lot of money. Does it really make sense to spend your entire life, you've only got one life, making more money? Mm. Or don't you want to find a way that you can use that money? Of course, you want to enjoy it, but also to use that some of that privilege to support other people, because otherwise, essentially, we are all just kind of struggling to survive. And I think that's one of these things that has come out again strongly from the pandemic is this feeling of, well, what is necessary and what is unnecessary in terms of industry. Mm-hmm. And of course, lots of places have deemed that the arts are unnecessary. And a lot of artists have been fighting back against this, saying, oh, you know, we'll try and go a day without Netflix or try and go a day without reading something on the internet. And I think, yeah, but is that art really, or is that entertainment? And in some ways, I think, yeah, maybe art is unnecessary in the strictest sense of the word. But if everything that we are doing in our lives is just the strictly necessary, if all we are doing is trying to get the human race to survive, then isn't that a very poor vision of human capacity? Surely we have the opportunity to do more exalted things than just survive. But even just surviving now, I think, is hard enough. I mean, I think climate change is one of the is the greatest challenge of our generation. And it is so imperative that we put as many resources as we can behind trying to tackle climate change. And we are trying to do that in our very small way. And it may not in the end actually make a great deal of difference, but if it can inspire other people to do things as well, then that's the greatest outcome that we can hope for.
Okay. All right. And we're running out of time, I'm afraid, but what are some future plans for Rimbundahan? I mean, some other programs that you guys have lined up? Anything in that space?
Not really, no.
That's quite a lot. Sorry, I know. Very demanding, aren't I? Sorry.
We sort of make things up as we go along, and this idea of the academics coming, that was out of the blue. Bilkis had it, and she got it started within weeks. So it's up to her now to decide what she wants to do with the place and her engagement. She's got to feel fully engaged and fully in full ownership of everything so that she can really take charge.
Yes, this is a big ask to hear from my parents.
On radio, no less, right? She's putting it out there. If you could see Bilke's face right now. But of course, I think number one on that list of to-do is to get Hijas's exhibition going. I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, yes. It will happen. Don't you worry. There will be announcements.
May not be here, though. I don't think he wants it here. He wants the validity of an outside institution to host it.
And not just one, maybe several.
And the idea behind showing the work is to encourage young architects and students to venture forth into new areas. Don't just think that being an architect means passing all your exams. You've got to be interested in everything. Mm-hmm. You've got to try everything and expand your horizons. And that's what his life has been about. And I guess that's what we're doing here too.
We are trying.
We're trying.
I think you're doing a wonderful job. So thank you so much, both of you, for joining me today. Any last message you'd like to leave us with?
Just to invite everybody, if they would like to come and see the exhibition in our gallery, we close on the 11th of April. So come along for that.
Okay, and just head to the Facebook page to register, was that right?
There's a link on the Facebook page and also on our website.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much, both of you, for joining me today. I've been speaking to Angela Hijas and Bilkis Hijas. They are both directors of Rimbundahan, and we were talking about all the various different residencies and programs that Rimbundahan offers, and also, I suppose, why we need to give back when we can. If you miss any part of today's interview or any previous Live and Learn interviews, you can search for the podcast on our BFM app, available on Google Play, the App Store, and also on Spotify. And you can also find us on Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts. And again, if you'd like to find out more about Rimbundahan, just head to their Facebook page or their website at rimbundahan.org. This has been Good Things on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.